Hello, everyone, and welcome to The Paul Garcia Show Live. Today, I have two very special guests, Tom and Jennifer Roth of El Paso, Illinois. They have an incredible story. They've done some incredible things with Can Do Kids International and also your own story, a tragic story. In a way, though, a heartwarming and touching and inspiring story of what good can come from terrible events. We're going to share that as well, and I can't wait for that. However, that said, given the subject matter, I want to go ahead and give a couple shout-outs right now. First of all, to this show's live sponsor, Marshalloni's. Marshalloni's is the sole sponsor of these live episodes. Marshalloni's in Fairbury has the most incredible pizza in probably the world, let's be honest. If you call between 4 and 5 p.m. any day of the week and order one pizza, you'll get the second pizza of equal or lesser value for free. Restrictions apply. And then you can show up at their drive-thru at 8 p.m., say, and pick it up and still get that happy hour discount. They are incredible. No one out pizzas Marshalloni's. Better ingredients, better pizza, Marshalloni's pizza. Then, on that note, we also have a call-in line today at 309-807-4866. Later on in this episode, if you'd like to ask Tom and Jennifer any questions, give any comments, any concerns, anything like that, maybe tell me I'm doing a terrible job, you can do so, and we'll all hear it live, and everyone watching will hear it live, if you just call 309-807-4866. All right, and also there are no call screenings, so if you're a crazy person, I guess you're getting through, and we'll handle that when we get there. But anyway, Tom and Jennifer, thank you so much for coming on today. I truly appreciate your time.
We're glad for the opportunity. Looking forward to talking to you, Paul.
All right. Good deal.
We're thankful to be here. A little nervous about it.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
The emotions of it. Uh-huh. But we're happy to be here.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's to be expected. I mean, when you're talking about something important, that's just how it goes. You want to get it right. And when you know people are watching, oh, I mean, that's just one of the most common fears in the world is public speaking. And with me, I kind of forget about it after over 100 episodes, you know. But if I start thinking about it, I'll definitely get a little nervous as well. But anyway, you guys, you do a lot. You two are a really incredible team. You seem to be built on a strong foundation of faith. Just for people who don't know much about you, can you give us a brief summary of who you are? We know you're a married couple from El Paso, Illinois, but what more can you tell us?
Me? Tom and I kind of look at each other and it's like, all right, who's going to do this one? We are from El Paso, Illinois, and we have lived there all of our married lives. Tom grew up on the East Coast near Philadelphia, and I was born in this area and have lived in the Bloomington Normal, El Paso area all of my life. We have two Krista, who will talk about what happened today, and then we have Kaylee, who is in Germany with her Ukrainian husband.
Narrowly fled Ukraine. Yes. When they had the chance. Yeah, that was incredible.
Yeah, waiting to get here to the States, and also expecting their first child in October in
Wow.
Germany. So, lots going on, and. We have been leading Can Do Kids International since 2007 is when Can Do Kids started, and then we went international in 2012. And so we spend our time in different countries and trying to raise awareness of issues like the water crisis in the world when we're here at home. Mm-hmm. So,
what is the water crisis? It seems like we have enough water in the United States. We'd put it in our toilets and flush it. So
water here is safe, it's accessible, it's easy, and it's cheap. It's not that way in the rest of the world. Just imagine if you went to a school and there was no water at the school. You'd either have to bring some from home if you had it, or you'd have to go out and find it somewhere where it's probably not safe and it's probably valuable. And as a result, kids at schools spend a lot of time fetching water instead of being educated. They are in danger. And then there's the waterborne diseases that come from water that's not clean or safe. And we've been working, among other things, to help resolve those issues. We put water systems in schools, or Can Do Kids does, in central Kenya. And it makes water is life, is what they say, and it makes a world of difference. Mm-hmm. And our whole family's been involved with that, including Krista and Kaylee, which is really, really cool.
Got it. Yeah. And before we move on, Tom, I'm going to have you move that mic, aim it right towards your mouth. You know all about it. You're a videography, photography guy. Where it's aimed means everything for the listeners and the viewers. Okay, so you do this Can-Do Kids International. You have been for a long time, Can-Do Kids and Can-Do Kids International. Are you built, and we're going to talk about your daughters here in a second, but are you guys pretty faith-heavy, would you say? It seems like...
Well, it's a faith-based organization. Our purpose is that kids around the world can experience God's love, and we do that by helping empower their communities to meet their most basic needs. So it looks different here in the U.S. than it does in Kenya or it does in Ukraine, especially since the war, or in the Philippines. But it's the same purpose, to help kids experience God's love.
Wonderful. And before we continue on, I should mention, I can't believe I didn't say this, when you call 309-807-4866 for questions, comments, concerns, or anything like that, we're going to do that in about 40 minutes. Someone just tried calling, so we'll get back to you 30, 40 minutes or so. Sorry about that. I should have prefaced that. But okay. So, you've been doing this for a number of years then.
Yeah, Jenny's been full-time since the beginning. I left our photography and videography business about 5 years ago and have been full-time since then. So it's newer for me in terms of being, I've helped, of course, but to actually be there as the main thing we do for both of us has been about 4 or 5 years.
Got it. Okay. Now, before we started talking, and this is ridiculous that I didn't know this beforehand, I knew it was recent. But Jennifer told me that, you know, Krista actually passed away, your daughter, just in January 20th, 2021, which is only about 20 months ago. I don't know why. Part of me thought it was a few years ago. This is actually incredibly recent. And before we talk about how exactly that you made something good come from such
God
a
made
horrible.
Something good come. We didn't. We're ordinary people, and we don't deserve any of the credit. So
God made it happen.
If you send the credit this way, we'll try to deflect it where it belongs.
Understood. I love that. That's wonderful, actually. I respect that a lot. I need to do a little more of that, I think. A lot of us do. And, okay. So, if you don't mind, I know we're really jumping right into it. If you'd be willing, what exactly happened with Krista then in 2021?
Well, Jenny says I have to tell this part of the story.
Yeah.
Take your time with it, yeah.
Well, again, to set the context, with our work with Can-Do Kids, we do a lot of it in other countries, and then we coordinate the people in the other countries from here. So basically, if we have a good internet connection, we can do our work from just about anywhere in the world. And with COVID going in 2020, we thought, well, maybe... Yeah, since we won't be traveling like we normally do to Kenya and other places, maybe we could go someplace warm and do our work there instead of Central Illinois in December and January. And some friends of ours got some super cheap tickets to Florida, so we thought, hey, maybe we could find an Airbnb in Florida and just set up there, you know, do our work, go for walks, enjoy the warm weather instead of the Central Illinois ice and snow. And when we started talking about it, that was the idea between Jenny and I, but Krista injected herself into that conversation, and by the time she was done with us, we were going to Costa Rica, and it would be an early graduation gift for her, as well as a place for us to get work done. So we ended up going to Costa Rica for 2 weeks. It was during the break between semesters for her. Krista was entering her final semester as a chemical engineering major at the University of Illinois.
And that's incredible.
It is. It's a really tough field, and she was an honor student there, and she really loved college. She was a leader in the marching band. She had a great, wonderful experience in college. And like I said, she had helped us with water systems in Kenya, I mean, from selling corn, you know, that she would pick, you know, from a local farmer, to making videos, to actually going over there and helping. And then the summer before, in summer of 2020, she had an engineering internship with a group called Water Mission, whose world headquarters is in South Carolina. They provide engineering solutions for the world's water crisis, really heavy-duty stuff. And she learned a lot there. She worked in a water purification research lab at the university. And her goal was to get a job in water, to bring clean water to people. And her hope was that before starting her first real engineering job after college, she could actually go back to Kenya, visit the approximately 40 water systems we had done by that time, and see if there's any way to improve the quality of them with things that she had learned. So anyway, so now we're in Costa Rica. The first week was wonderful. We were up in the mountains. We did our work, did the things we needed to do, enjoyed the time there with her. And then the second week, we were at the beach. And again, to set it up for you, we on Wednesday, we got there on Monday, and except for me, no one had gone swimming before then. And on Wednesday, Krista picked the beach they wanted to go to. It wasn't Jenny's choice, but it was a very remote beach. There weren't anybody around, but it was beautiful. And I was still doing work, so they left in the morning, and I joined them about noontime or so on Wednesday. And as soon as I got there, Krista said, "Hey, Dad, can we go for a swim?" And, you know, I wasn't crazy about swimming. Probably because my mind was full of work. There wasn't people around. And, you know, and I'm usually the one that drags other people into the water so we can swim. But it was Krista's idea. So I said, sure, we can go. So we went in to the water to swim. And, again, she was in the middle of this great vacation with a great life. And everything was probably perfect from her standpoint. And we got swept out. And I motioned for her we need to come back in. And I swam in, you know, thinking she was behind me, but she wasn't. And I got into the shore, and Jenny says, "I think Krista's in trouble." So we quickly took some bigger water bottles, emptied them, thought that maybe they could be used for flotation, took a strap, and I swam out to her. And Jenny says it was miraculous. She doesn't know how I made it so fast. I don't either, because you were talking about tragedies earlier. Your mind is so focused. There was only one thing on my mind at that time. And I got to her, and I didn't even bother, you know, giving her the flotation device. I just grabbed her, put her in a cross chest carry, something I learned in life-saving and Boy Scouts, and swam her into the shore. And, again, I have no idea what was going on in her mind. She, you know, she was upright. She was looking my way. She looked relieved. She didn't struggle when I reached her. And, again, I don't know if that meant she was already dead or if she was unconscious or she was just relieved that I was there. We'll never know the side of heaven, what was going on in her mind. So anyway, I grabbed her, and the surf was rough. We got dumped by a wave. If you're used to swimming in the ocean, sometimes a big wave comes and gets you and just tumbles you on the bottom, and you're, you know, underwater for 10 or 15 seconds before you can pop back up and get going. And we got dumped at least twice. I remember one of the times coming back up, and she's floating probably 15 feet from me, so I quickly swam over there and kept going in. And again, I even had the thought, maybe I should stop in the water and try, you know, mouth to mouth. But then the thought was, we got to get her to the shore and get CPR going as quick as we can. And so made it in there, and I was exhausted, as you could imagine. You know, Krista's skinny. She's probably 120 pounds. And I needed Jenny's help to help drag Krista up. You know, the beach slanted up. We dragged her up there. We pushed some water out of her lungs, and we started CPR with one of us doing chest compressions and the other doing breathing. And, you know, she wasn't showing any response. And I don't know how long it was just the two of us, but then there was a woman walking on this remote beach who saw us and ran to help us, who was a CPR instructor, which is, you know, a great blessing. So she took my place, and I ran to a hotel that was probably a little more than a kilometer away, and, you know, did one of those, is there a doctor around? We need help right away. And, you know, they sent their young strapping men and other people down there. And, you know, when I returned, and they were, by the time I got back, they were doing CPR. And I need to add one more point to the story. We have I use air quotes, adopted son from Costa Rica we met him through ISU. He was a student here who's been like part of our family to us. And whenever we're in Costa Rica, we're with him. And he's got the same goofy, he's brilliant like Kristen. He's got the same goofy personality that she had. And he fit right in with our family. And he was with us. But he wasn't at the beach. He went on a bicycle ride to look for a different beach where we could go later, which I think is a good thing, because he's not a good swimmer. And I think if he would have been there, he would have tried to save Krista. And there's no way I could have gotten two of them. Probably all three of us would have drowned. But anyway, so Jenny called him. He called an ambulance. And finally, you know, the ambulance came. They did CPR. They, you know, shocked her like you see on TV. And when they shocked her, you know, on TV, people's chest always jump when that happens. Nothing happened. She just continued to lay there. And then they pronounced her dead. And you know, so this, our whole lives changed in, you know, a few minutes. You know, what was a great vacation and enjoyable prospects turned into tragedy that we, you know, you can never be fully prepared for something like that. So we sat on the beach. You had to have, you know, there were a lot of police there. You had to have a judge come, and everyone was so kind for us. That's when we started making phone calls. I guess I'll tell you about one of our phone calls. I had only had one other thought when I was swimming Krista in from when I got her. Is if she doesn't make it, how do I tell our other daughter, Kaylee? know, how do I tell my daughter, who's in Ukraine, you know, working with Can Do Kids, teaching English, working with kids there, you know, and we hadn't seen her since August because that's when she left for Ukraine. How do I tell her? And I had no clue, you know, so I thought, well, do I get on a plane and go over there and tell her in person? But she's probably going to hear from somebody else first. You know, so that was the only thing other than Krista that was on my mind at this time. And anyway, so Krista's dead. She's covered up in a blanket. You know, there's police and police tape, the whole scene you'd expect. And the first call we made was to Jenny's mom, you know, told them. And then we called my dad. And somehow, you know, when I was talking to my dad, again, these were short phone calls, you know, 20-second phone calls. You know, I saw that Kaylee was calling me. I thought, that's really, really weird. And I said, well, I guess this is my answer, what to do. You know, I can't act like nothing happened and then tell her later. So I said, Dad, you know, Kaylee's calling. I need to hang up. And I took Kaylee's call. And the first thing she said was, Dad, did something bad happen? So I asked her, I said, where are you? And she was living with friends in Ukraine who were wonderful people. And I said, is there anybody with you? And then I told her what happened. And then we had to start working on trying to get her back too. But it was just amazing that she, I think somehow, I don't know if we hit her number by mistake and she heard something she didn't understand going on anyway, that she would call me and ask that question. And that, so anyway, that was what happened that day. Then from then on, it was working with the embassy. Because when someone dies overseas, you've got a lot of bureaucratic hoops you've got to jump through, a lot of logistics. I mean, it was all new territory for us. And I will say, sometimes I get critical of big government, but the embassy did an absolutely fantastic job. They anticipated our needs. They helped us in every way possible. They did stuff we can never do ourselves. And also a big shout out to Felix. You know, we said he's like a son, but I think few people have a better son than we had in him, because he's in the tragedy with us. You know, he's not a casual observer. He's one of us right there, and he speaks the language, and he did so much for coordinating things with us, reaching out to the people we needed to reach to, making arrangements. I mean, he did all the cooking and cleaning for us. He packed up all of our stuff, all of Krista's stuff. And the love that was poured out on us, you know, starting on the beach from meeting the woman who helped us to the embassy, to Felix. Then somebody who heard about us connected us with missionaries in Costa Rica, and we actually went to their home before we flew home instead of being in a cold, lonely hotel room. And they fed us, listened to us, cried with us, encouraged us, prayed with us. It was an incredible blessing. And our whole story from then on was just, in the midst of this terrible tragedy, you know, the pain, the grief, we had blessing upon blessing. We had peace. We were overwhelmed. And overwhelmed is not too strong of a word, with the love that was poured out, God's love through people poured out on us. I mean, we even joke about it. It was just a couple weeks ago, the first time we've had to buy toilet paper since then, because people have given us so much of everything we need, you know, from the practical things to the heartfelt things. And it's just, I mean, been an incredible journey that we never would have anticipated. And from our standpoint, it was unbelievable how something so bad, in a way, could have been handled so good. And again, we're ordinary people. It wasn't us. It was God's love through people that we know in so many ways. I mean, and it wasn't just right then. It was, I mean, it still continues to now. Mm-hmm. So that's the story of January 20th, the day, really, when I think of my life, I've got the before January 20th part of my life and the after January 20th. My perspectives are different. It's just the line of one of the big lines of demarcation in my life.
What changed as far as your perspectives after that day?
Well, again, I think I'm less connected to the world and the things that we're doing in the world. There's some verses in Colossians 3 that say, set your hearts and your minds on things above, on heaven. And I think I've got more of a heavenly perspective. I mean, now I look backwards, you know, because of course, since then we've thought about Krista so much, and I'm overwhelmed with feelings of gratitude, just what we've experienced. We joke, you know, because of the work we do, we don't make much. I came from a career where I had a good income to doing the ministry that we do when we have a very low income. But we joke often that we are just filthy rich in the things that matter, in relationships, and it's just wonderful. So we can look backwards on our lives with gratitude, but then we look forwards with hope. I mean, you know, as a Christian, I've always learned a little bit about heaven, but it wasn't a big topic or interest. I figure I'll figure that out when I get there. Now I've become a lot more interested in it, and it's getting more and more exciting. And ultimately, because we see Christ, but then we'd be reunited with other believers too. So it's just incredible to have this anchor of hope that as we go through the rest of our life, you know, not knowing what's going to happen, we can look backwards again with gratitude and forwards with hope, all because of what has happened on and since January 20th.
Mm. And Jennifer, well, first of all, both of you guys, what do you even say to that? I can't. It took my breath away. I've never heard a story like that. That's unreal.
You ask, you know, what we've learned or what's changed, and just one little small thing in what you just said right there. I think I learned that when you go through a tragedy and you're with people that have been through a tragedy, truly the best thing to say to them is there are no words. I think people try to make excuses or try to justify or whatever, try to come up with some kind of platitude to make everything feel better. You just can't do that. So if somebody's gone, I just totally now understand that if somebody's gone through a tragedy, you just really need to say there are no words, because there's not. Yeah.
So I won't ask what people have said. Actually, I will, if you don't mind. What are just some, for the sake of learning for all of us, because it's so rare that anyone goes through something like this. Sometimes people will lose. It's early in life sometimes, you know, you have miscarriages, which are tragic. I've spoken to women who have had miscarriages on the show.
Yeah, and we've been there.
Oh, have you been there as well?
Krista was what you call a rainbow baby, which is a birth that happens after a miscarriage. So after I had my second miscarriage, we were pregnant with Krista within a month. And I don't know if I've, how much I've even talked to you about this, but this just brings up this memory, is that we had, Tom and I had a hard time getting pregnant to begin with when we started our marriage. So we were 7 years without kids. So we didn't start with, that's why we just have the two, because we had multiple miscarriages. And so after having that second miscarriage, I just remember having a conversation with God and saying, you know, I just want this child. And even if I could have the child for a short period of time, I want that. And I give that child to you. And that did come back to my memory after this happened. I'm like, okay, I guess I, you know, and I mean, I guess I look back on that and I think God did give me, he did answer that. And he gave Krista for a certain period of time. And he also has really used, I mean, her life in 21 years was very, very full. I mean, so much. And then we are seeing so much happen with her story even after she's gone. So in that way, she continues to live on. So, yeah.
Let me chime in on that. I mean, Jenny, some women like being pregnant. Jenny hated being pregnant. And with Krista, she had been pregnant for like more than 11 months because she had this miscarriage. And then after you have a miscarriage, the doctor usually brings you back in a couple weeks just to check out and make sure things are all right. And so he's doing that. And it's like, you're pregnant. So she lost the baby, and if she wouldn't have lost that baby, we wouldn't have had Krista, because, you know, each egg's obviously unique. Mm-hmm. But so she even had kind of a miraculous, funny start, you know, again, making her mother pregnant for 11 months.
Yeah. Oh, my. Wow.
There's a thing. I've joined a couple grieving groups for parents on Facebook that I've been part of. Yeah, just because I'm very fascinated with how do people respond in tragedies, and, you know, what goes on. So I think for me, just identifying with other people who have lost children is healing and helpful. And it's also just interesting to observe, you know, what people have. And one of the questions that goes around in those groups is, would you rather have not had your child, and or have what happened? have a child and lose it. And, you know, as painful as it is, I would never go back and say I would never have wanted Christy here. I would much rather have had her for 21 years than not had her at all.
And why is that, if you don't, if you care to elaborate? Because a lot of people hear that and think, what?
Well, and I, on the Facebook grieving groups, that's kind of the argument. People go back and forth because a lot of them say, no, I would have rather not had that child because I wouldn't have had to feel the pain. And
a lot of those people have no hope, too. So their lives are just awful.
Sure. Oh, the depression that they have.
I mean, for decades, it's incredible. I feel so bad for so many people. If you're living life without hope, it's
good luck.
Yeah, there's no luck. I mean, nothing can help you.
And so, again, I ask, why would you rather them be alive for a limited time despite their tragic death later on at an early age?
Well, for me and my story and, you know, Krista's life, it's like the love that I have for her and the love that she brought here is greater than the pain of losing her. You know, so I would much rather, and I do have a hope, you know, with the faith that I have a hope of reuniting, and I have a hope that, you know, at some point we will get together and we're going to look back on all of this and go, yes, you know.
what an interesting thing that'll be, too. I was just talking with someone last night. It's like, you know, sometimes, at least me, I have to step back and think, Christ really was Christ. There really is heaven. We really will go there if we do things right when we die. And there'll be a lot of people there. And I don't know how that's going to be. All I know is we'll be perfect. So if perfect means shaking hands with these people and then together looking at Christ, I don't know what it's going to look like. But that is a reality that, again, to say the same phrase, it should take your breath away. It's really remarkable. And if I could be so bold as to say, just something that I thought about, I heard recently, is the great thing about human beings and two bodies, even just two human beings, is that's the only mechanism for love to manifest. And God is love. And the only way God manifests in the world is between two people. And without a given individual's existence, love cannot manifest for that person or come from that person. And when that person's a light in your life, the world is literally so much better because of their existence. And yes, when they go, it's, of course, it's beyond tragic, and we're never ready. But, and it seems like Krista was a really loving person, or you said she was goofy.
She was funny. She was brilliant and funny. And yeah, she was not a saint. She had struggles like everyone else.
Yes.
She was an incredible daughter, though. And she started following Christ at age about 4, and he transformed her. I mean, I told you the story before about how Krista was motivated by money as a little kid before we were on air. As she grew, she was still motivated by money, but not so she could have it, but so she could give it. I mean, one of the great blessings we have received since losing Krista, she had written journals. Did you know about the journals?
I had no idea.
Until now?
Like she's still talking
to us. We found journals.
See. I was like, wow, just truths are coming out on the show.
So we get insights into her thinking, and the insights are incredible. I mean, they couldn't be any more encouraging for us as parents. And there are also all kinds of funny, funny things in there. I mean, one entry she started, you know, it was in the middle of the pandemic. And she said, well, all the quarantining, I've been spending a lot of time with myself. And I realize I am really cool. And then she gives 2 pages of bullet points to, you know, prove her assertion.
Awesome.
Which, again, she's not expecting anyone would ever read. But there's funny stuff like that all through.
Well, so. You were talking about money. That brought the other thing to my mind. We were reading through her journals, and she would play. She was loved like Fortnite, Minecraft, and stuff.
Oh, she was a gamer.
She was a gamer to an extent, and so she and her friends from U of I actually built Memorial Stadium at U of I in Minecraft, and had the little marching band. And so she did things like that, and. So she was very proud of herself because she decided that she was going to just see if she could get people to give her money on Venmo that she didn't know that she met in the gaming world.
Really?
And she would just pester them until they actually gave her something. And she just thought that was the funniest. I mean, she didn't have any reason for it except for just seeing if she could do it. And she was able to accomplish that. She was very proud of herself. But she was, you know, she just did funny things. And
yeah, what a wonderful girl.
I brought a couple excerpts from her journal.
Sure.
I would love to read the first one, and sometime before we're done, the last one.
Of course.
So this is...
And all I ask is that you come up on that microphone.
Sure. This is June 2018. She is, you know, probably a freshman in college. This is, and I won't correct her mistake. She was a terrible speller, just like her father, and she made other mistakes you'll get. Said, this journal looks like something that would be uncovered from a super old dusty box by my ancestors. Of course, she meant descendants. Long after I'm gone.
That's good.
Why I'm writing in cursive? For the antique effect. If people find this in the far future, I hope they can still read cursive. I'm pretty surprised I can still write in cursive. It's been a long time. So, ancestors, if you exist and you're reading this, hello. And I hope you all get some of my fantastic genes. Parenthetically, I've got some pretty good ones. And if people of the future, parenthetically, not related to me are reading this, I hope you gain some good crystal wisdom. I'm not really sure what this journal will be, but I know it will be filled with spelling mistakes. If it actually gets written, I'm garbage at journaling. I'm hoping I'll actually use this because it's nice, I can do art stuff, and it was $20. I feel like I've heard a lot about journaling this past year and would like to look back and know where I was, where I came from, and what I thought the future might be like. So hi, hee-ho, here we go.
Wow.
So that's how it all starts.
That's the type of woman she was.
And we didn't know like anything that. About that until we were gathering up her stuff after she died. And just, you know, we can speak for Krista because not just from our memories, but because of what she's told us.
Yeah, she put her mind on paper.
Exactly.
That's awesome. What that was a funny thing. She didn't plan on anyone reading that?
No, that was private.
Wow.
No. It definitely has been a blessing to us to be able to read.
Oh, I bet.
Where she was at and her journals have definitely been a blessing to us. Yeah.
And to other people too, cuz you could really see her heart for loving people and wanting them to experience God's love the same way she did. It showed in her actions, but it also showed, in what she was thinking about, in her deepest thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
So and that was really cool.
Go ahead. Were you going to
say
something?
Well, I was just going to say it also, I mean, it was something I was aware of because Krista and I were speaking a lot during 2020 because, you know, classes were online and she spent a lot more time at home then, but reading in her journals too, just a lot of questions of faith that she was having because of Christian nationalism rising and a lot of the some of the ugly things that she was seeing, you know, in the news and just really in her journals trying to wrestle with that, being someone who grew up in the church and who did have faith, but also trying to reconcile what's happening in the world and this division that's happening. And, you know, a lot of these ugly things I see being done in the name of Jesus. And, you know, is that's not who I am. So who am I? And, you know, so it was just interesting to really read through a lot of her, you know, thinking on that.
Mm-hmm. I love that. I like that you said wrestled. She wrestled with these things. You probably know the word Israel means to wrestle with God.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think everyone needs to wrestle with God, and it's in wrestling that you grow stronger. You have to ask the questions. You have to figure things out, ask those questions, and go to smart people. And I like that. I like that because then you can either submit and say, man, I don't get it. Goodbye, God. Goodbye, faith. Or you can wrestle with it.
He's big enough to take your questions.
What was that?
He's big enough to take your questions.
That's absolutely right.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And before we take some calls here in just a few minutes, I do want to ask a major question here. And it's almost advice and it's almost out of curiosity. So we're trying to give maybe people that have experienced something similar some advice and then just feed people's curiosity. How did you square this with your faith? That this happened? How did you answer the question? You speak of God being able to answer any question. Why did you let this happen? That's the natural question that so many people are going to have. How would an all-loving God, all-merciful God, allow for someone so innocent and loved and young to die so tragically?
I think the problem with that question is the perspective. We have expectations, and if you talk to most people, A perfect life would be where you live to be old, you're successful in your career and your family, you don't experience much pain and suffering, then you go to sleep and die in your sleep at a ripe old age. That's not the way it was intended. If you read the Bible, the first chapter, God creates everything, and he creates it perfectly. And there's no suffering, no death. The second chapter, he focuses on mankind, the pinnacle of his creation. Again, perfect. They have perfect relationship with God, perfect relationship with each other. A fantastic. That was what was intended. Then the third chapter, mankind wrecks everything. Brings death, brings suffering, brings sorrow. We weren't created for death and suffering. Then the remaining, I just looked this up for some kids I was teaching, 1,186 chapters is how God is fixing everything to restore it to the way it should be, the way he wants it. And he paid the awesome price of sending his son to redeem mankind and to fix this stuff. So the death, the hard things that we've experienced weren't part of the plan, and there will be restoration. And God doesn't owe us or anyone else an explanation. He's given us the big picture. He's given us a reason for hope. I mean, think, you were talking about Job. I don't remember if it was before we started or with one of your other guests. You know, in all that conversation, you know, when we read Job, we know what was going on in heaven. We know why it was happening and what happened, but God never told Job why. And God wants us to trust him by faith. And when you can trust somebody if you know their character, if you know them, you can't trust somebody that you don't know, who you doubt their character. But someone who is faithful, you can trust. And God is faithful. He's been faithful in preparing us for this. He's been faithful in through this. And he's been faithful in healing us and helping others and honoring himself, you know, since we lost Krista. So, yeah, it certainly wouldn't be. And we need to trust him. We need to trust him when we agree with him. We need to trust him when we disagree with him and when we don't understand. We don't trust. It's what we need to do all the time. And not because of us, but because of him, because he is trustworthy. So I hope that answers your question.
Right.
I have a different perspective, though.
Let's go.
A little different perspective.
Please.
Not that I disagree there, but, you know, just the answering, because again, the first thing that tends to happen in a tragedy like this is you ask why. Why in the world would this happen? And I think, I just feel like it was one of God's blessings. I know this sounds really odd, but even when we were on the beach and it was going down, I had this strong sense that it was meant to happen. And I haven't had to ask the question why at all. I've said I hate this. And, you know, I don't like it. But I haven't had to ask the question why. Because I've just had this underlying sense of knowing that there was a purpose in this. You know, for us, I'm not saying apply this to every situation, you know, everybody's tragedy, but in our tragedy, I felt that way. And even Felix, when he was on the beach that day, when he first arrived, because he had been out riding his bike, and I had called him, he's the one that called the emergency people to come. And so he got there a little bit after the emergency people came. And when he came to me, he said, I feel like this was supposed to happen. And I think Tom has felt that way too. And, you know, again, some of it was, I think, in having a relationship with God over the years, not religion. I haven't been following rules. I mean, you know, well, I do follow rules. I am a rule follower. But, you know, it's not religion, but having a relationship with God that has been growing over the years. There were some things that happened over the past years that I felt like God was getting us ready for it. And some of them were a little weird. and another, you know, something had happened, you know, where I really felt like God spoke to me when we were in Kenya on a whitewater rafting trip, like on a really crazy river. But I felt like God spoke to me then, giving me this heads up that something was coming. And, you know, I kept kind of waiting, like, when is this class 5 going to happen? You know, this big, you know, drop in my life or whatever. And I didn't feel like it was like 4 years before this happened with Krista. And when we lost Krista, I felt like, this was it. God was giving me a heads up, and God was giving me a method of being prepared for it.
It seems like you're almost tuned in a way to what was coming and when it was happening. And what a strange thing.
You need to share what the guys had told you at the start of the journey.
Well, I don't know. Are you needing to take calls? I don't want to go.
Oh, go ahead.
Okay.
Anyone who's calling is listening to this.
Okay. So when we were in Kenya, it was 4 years before, so like 2017, I think. Tom was with guys at a pastor's conference, and my sister, who you met at the Proving Ground.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah,
that's
you
right.
met her. She, Gloria, and Shaylin, who right. you also met, and me, and Krista, and Gloria's son, Javin. We decided the kids, we had crammed into this little Kenyan apartment for a whole month, and we decided they needed something fun to do, you know. So they chose whitewater rafting. So we ended up going to this place called Rapids Camp and went on a whitewater rafting trip and found out that it went up to class 5. And so we were just like two women with our kids and three different guides. And
class 5 is like
yeah.
very dangerous, deadly.
Well,
if you fall off,
and
you're toast.
Crocodiles and hippos,
I was trying to get out of that because after we got all suited up for it and we're riding out there, I'm like, what's percentage chance are we get dumped in this? Because I had whitewater rafted before, but never on class 5. And they said probably 70%. And I'm just like, oh gosh, I wish I could get out of this, you know? And we were asking if there were hippos, and they said, no, there's not hippos where we're going, but they're about a kilometer upstream, but we don't have to worry about them.
And no chance they'll come.
Yeah, so I'm like, kilometer. You know, as we're getting closer to putting in the water, I'm thinking, oh my gosh, what did I get myself into here? And so when we got in, there was a guide in the back of the raft for us. There was a guide in the front of the raft, and then they had a third guide in a kayak on you know, the side in case we would fall out. And so when they put us in, they gave us some instructions, and they basically, the guide said, if you listen to my instructions, we'll be okay. We'll be able to manage this. And it's very simple. It's like you paddle forward, paddle backwards. And he had us kind of mimic what he was doing. And it was jump right, jump left, and all in. Like, all brace your feet and go to the middle of the raft. So we practiced that a little bit, and then we set off. And the first part of the whitewater rafting trip was really calm. And that's where I felt like God was speaking to me. And I just felt like God said, Jenny, your life coming up is going to be like this river. And you do not know what's coming up. You don't know what's ahead. You don't know when the class 2s are. You don't know when the class 5. But just like that guide told you, that you have to listen and respond, like immediately, like listen. And so I felt like God said, you don't know what's coming up, but what I need you to do is lean into me, because my hearing's going a little bit. So I have to lean in to be able to hear anybody. So I felt like God was saying, lean in, listen, and then when I speak, respond. And I had so... coming out of that, I had kind of been in that mode of like, all right, I really felt strongly like God was saying something is coming up and you really need to lean in and be listening. And so I did take note of that. I mean, just to add, at the end, there were two things at the end of the trip. When we got done with the whitewater rafting trip, they traditionally, there's a waterfall. It's a 40-foot waterfall. And they have a plank off to the side of the waterfall, and you go walk up and you jump off the plank to the side of the waterfall and then float over to the side. And so we ended up going and doing that. And I remember walking out onto the plank and thinking, I looked down at the water. I'm like, I'm 50 years old, man. I'm not doing this. So I backed up, and the same guide that gave us the instructions told me, the more you think about it, the less likely you are to do it. Because I've typically been an anxious person. So it is. It's true. The more you think about something you don't want to do, the less likely you are to do it. And I just felt like that was another instruction God was giving me, was just, if I say something, you do it. go, you know, don't, you know, the more, less likely you are to do it. And anyway, at the end, when we all had, all of us jumped off, Kaylee, or Christy even had the GoPro on. So we have a nice video of her jumping into the water and going off. And anyway, there were like 40 students from a school in Kenya that were watching us when we did this. They were with a scout group. And so we were speaking to them after we were all finished. And but when we finished, there was just this sense of like, oh my gosh, I can't believe I just did this. You know, this was amazing. It was so cool. And I also kind of felt like God gave me that feeling of emotion to hang on to also, because I feel like when I get to heaven and reunite with Krista, it's going to feel like the end of that trip, where we look back on all that God's done. We look at the time we went over the 5-foot little waterfall and scraped my leg up, you know, and had those scars and everything. And we'll look back on that journey and go, yes, look at what just happened. Look at what we did. And I hang on to that feeling. I mean, that gives me courage to keep going. So I just... yeah, I'm not sure we're usual in how people grieve, but I feel like God was just really giving us everything we needed.
Wow.
To be able to be ready.
Can I tell you about two other things that prepared us?
Yes, sure.
Okay.
And then we will take a couple calls for some people. So everyone, after this story, if you want to call in at 309-807-4866 with any questions, comments, or concerns, we see a good few of you have been steadily watching the stream. So go ahead, after Tom's done with this story, call in and let us know what you want to let us know. But yes, please.
Okay. Before we were full-time with Can-Do Kids, we had a photography.
A little closer, I'm so sorry.
Photography and videography business. And one of the things we did were funeral videos, where we would get the photos, Photoshop them to look as good as they could, then tell someone's life story, you know, in their pictures. And, you know, and our kids started working for us both when they were about 9 years old. So they were very familiar with what we did, why we did it, how we did it, and these funeral videos, among other things. And then out of the blue, one day Krista came to me and she said, Dad, I know what I want in my funeral video. And Whoa. She wanted the song Come to Jesus, which it's, I think it's called Untitled Hymn. Or something like that. Mm-hmm. But it's basically, and I asked her why. She said, because I want, you know, if I have to die, I want people to know how they can experience God's love like I did. I want them to know. And I want this video. And I thought at the time, this is, you know, she was about 10, 12 years old. This is really weird. Kaylee never said anything like that to other kids. So I just kind of tucked it in the back of my mind. And then a couple years later, she came to Jenny.
Well, she came to me. She was junior high at the time, and she just came up in a conversation and said, you know what? When I die, I want to die as a martyr. And she wanted to die for a cause. And I'm like, okay, that's really weird. Why would she be, you know, Kaylee never said anything like that to me. But but I had this, when she said that, I'm like, oh my gosh, is God like giving me some kind of a heads up that I might be ready? Like she's going to die in some kind of a different way. And I always kind of carried that with me. And then Kaylee told us, we didn't know this till after Krista died, but about a few months they had been before January 20th, they had been talking. And Krista brought it up with her and said, when you die, do you want to just like die in your sleep or would you want to die for a cause? And Kaylee said, well, like, yeah, I want to die in my sleep, you know, something easy. And Krista's like, I want to die for a cause. And it was just interesting that each one of us got like this, I don't know, it was just something that we look back on and it gives us a peace knowing, you know, maybe unconsciously Krista knew she was dying for something, you know.
Something deep inside something her deep, knew
Something
that.
Deep inside that she consciously didn't know, but it just makes me wonder, you know, what was there that knew that her mission maybe was shorter than the normal.
Well, I think from reading her journals and things she's told us and done, the things that was important to her have been basically promoted or going forward because of her death. I mean, with Can-Do Kids, we've had more than $200,000 come in, most of that to supply clean water to schools in Kenya, which is what she was passionate about. I mean, it's just amazing that the things that she wanted, that things that were important to her, and not just that, but others, they basically were propelled by her life and also by her death.
Wow. Man. Incredible. Yeah. Incredible. And I do want to tell everyone, feel free to call in. Preferred call in. Don't text us. But call in at 309-807-4866 with any questions, comments, or concerns. There's kind of a 20-second delay here or so, so... Maybe no one will call in. We'll see here. But if they do, we'll take your call. And if you don't, we won't. And we'll just keep talking a little bit. But, man, have you ever and you know what I'm going to have to go ahead and do is I'm going to steal that cord from your microphone. You guys will share. And that way, you know, if the listener calls in, they won't hear three different mics at the same time. Yeah.
I'll go ahead and do that.
All right, we're balling on a budget here. Okay. But yeah, the phone lines are open, 309-807-4866. Go ahead and call in with any questions, comments, or concerns. Looks like we do have a good few people right now tuning in, so feel free to call. I know we missed one at the very beginning, but hey, you know, whatever. Sorry about that. Call back. Yeah. You too, though. I mean, your insights on the whole situation, the way you responded, absolutely incredible. Did anyone ever teach you that, or do you think it just came as a natural byproduct of your faith?
Teach us what?
Teach you how to respond. Like, did anyone ever say, when tragedy, something I always think of is, I think Bishop Fulton Sheen, the venerable, is he from El Paso?
He was born almost right next to our office.
Wow. Okay, that's incredible. We have some of his letters and stuff here in this building, actually. Incredible guy. And one thing that he always said was, God, in the picture of our lives, I guess back in the day they'd weave tapestry from the back. He said, you know, you're just kind of focusing from the behind of the picture. You're focusing on each thread going through the hole or however tapestry is made, and you don't know what the overall picture looks like, and you're focused on one tiny part, and all you think is this is tedious, this is annoying, this is difficult, it's not pretty, but it's only when you zoom away or you flip it around when it's all said and done, you're like, wow, that was a beautiful picture. I'm glad I kept going with that. And God knows what the whole picture is. But sometimes we lose sight of the fact that we are, in fact, weaving a beautiful picture, or if there's a picture to be weaved at all, if it's all according to plan or anything like that. And I always liked that metaphor, that life is a lot like weaving tapestry from the back. You ever hear anything like that?
Well, we're going to fight now over this mic. we've definitely heard that because Corrie ten Boom, who spent time in the concentration camps in Nazi Germany, had the same illustration, the same with a tapestry and everything. And we've heard that throughout our life. And I think what faith is not like pushing out the trust and then actually seeing things. It's in the midst of the pain and the back of the tapestry, having faith that it does look better from another. You know, we don't actually see that, but it's like your faith grows in being able to trust that God has a good picture that's going to come out of what you're going through.
Well, faith is like a muscle, and you know from your wrestling career, if you don't exercise your muscles, they're not strong. So the more important question isn't how strong is your faith, but what's the object of your faith? I mean, you probably don't realize it, but the three of us are demonstrating faith right now by sitting in these chairs. I was in a group of people once. We all had chairs like this. We all had faith in the chairs. We all sat down, and one lady just sprawled all out on the floor, not because she had less faith, but because her chair wasn't faithful. So, again, faith needs to be exercised, and God certainly exercised it with us. He's given us his word, and we've gotten to know him, and he's faithful. So it's not, please take the focus off us. It's not our faith. It's the object of our faith that's faithful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like that. And something that someone's told me before about prayer is, I want to be patient. I want to be courageous. I want to be this. When you pray for that, God will help you, certainly. He'll give you an opportunity to practice patience and to exercise your patience, exercise your courage. And that's not fun. Lord, make me patient. Okay, he'll make you patient, but he'll give you someone that tests your patience, maybe. And that's an interesting way to look at it, and it sounds like that's kind of what you're saying. You need to exercise it.
Yeah, the Apostle Paul said the same thing, that you know, these trials, these tests, show the value of our faith. I mean, they build it, and they show the value of it. So there's no easy way. You can't say, make me patient right now. There's no easy way around it. So, and God knows what he's doing. You can trust him, even if you don't understand. Mm-hmm. And even if you don't like it. It's like that tapestry. When we pull back, we see the other side. Like Jenny said, when you jumped off the cliff and you did it, you were going to think, wow, this was absolutely incredible. This was beyond our wildest hope and imagination. Mm-hmm. But it's tough now.
Right, right.
But we have hope looking to the future.
Wow. Your hope is truly, truly extraordinary. I mean, more than inspiring. I hope parents that have experienced just the death of a child, really, watch this and really learn from you guys, because it's truly incredible. And you know what? It's to God be the glory, amen, like you said. And I just want to say one more time to everyone who's watching this, go ahead. We'll take one more of these, 309-807-4866. Call us up and ask your questions. Give your comments. You know, say these guys, say something that is really resonating. Tell us if something they're saying is really resonating with you, and if what I'm doing is good or bad. I don't know what I'm saying at this point. What am I saying? This is live. But yeah, call us up, 309-807-4866. Otherwise, we'll wrap this up pretty soon. But guys, you said you wanted to read one more thing, actually, from Krista's journal.
Yeah.
Would you mind doing that?
Okay, I read to you her very first entry. I'd like to read her very last entry.
Okay.
This was December 28th, so a few weeks before she died. And again, this is after all the stuff that's going on with COVID, all these hard things.
And pull that mic good and close to you.
Yeah, I'll pull myself closer to it. So here's Krista talking to us. She says, I want to live better. The truth about God, the Bible, faith is so much more important than everything else because my perception of the truth inspires and motivates everything I do. I'm sure I won't ever know everything about the truth while I'm on earth, but I want to believe and know as much of the truth as possible so I can live a life reflecting that truth and pointing others to it. And she says some other things, and she says, and I want to continue praying for my friends that they would be on a journey towards truth. They'd be comfortable to reach out to me for anything. I would love them very well, that they will one day have an incredible testimony that will help and inspire others, that they will be blessed and content with the truth. That's how it ended.
What a thing for a 21-year-old to say, the last journal entry. It's kind of crazy, don't you think, how when you look at the whole situation, the whole story, you almost can't help but believe that God's woven into there. Stuff's just too weird.
And we're just scratching the surface. We could go a lot longer.
Well, someone did leave a voicemail, it looks like, so we'll go ahead and play this. Hopefully it's nothing too crazy, but hopefully this works, I should say. Well, you know what? Just keep talking, and I think we'll try to figure this out another time.
Did they hear what I said, or do I need
to
repeat
it? No, you got
to
reread it. Okay, you're reading one more entry then.
Yeah, this isn't from her journal. Actually, did they even hear the last journal entry?
I'm not sure. Oh, yes, they heard. I think they heard the last journal entry.
Okay, this is...
I don't know, though.
The last thing that Krista wrote that we have, it was from an application for a scholarship at the university. She says, Water is life. I've been working with nonprofits to fundraise for water systems in rural Kenya since 2012. After enrolling at the University of Illinois, though, I realized I might be able to make an impact on the global water crisis in a different way, a way that reflects who I am and the skills and abilities I'm uniquely gifted with. I could use my analytical mind, creative problem-solving skills, and chemical engineering education to tackle the problem. Unfortunately, I can't say that I've solved the problem of the global water crisis yet, but... And then she goes to list a number of things she has worked on, and she concludes, this summer, I interned for Water Mission to help them provide clean water to people all over the world. I used equations I learned in class to help design a water filtration system that's being used in Indonesia today. And in her last sentence, with a degree from Illinois, I plan to continue doing my part so that one day we will see a world where everyone has access to the clean water they need.
Incredible.
And we've seen that happen since in incredible ways since she died.
Man. Wow. Wow. And I want to read a couple of comments here just from the Facebook stream. And they are, so Lisa, or no, not Lisa, Lish Schmidtgall-Steidinger. God is good, even when it makes no sense and we don't like it. But when we are truly in love with Christ, he will speak to our hearts. And like the Roths have said, when we are saved, we know that the life we haven't, or that we have here isn't it. Our life really begins when we meet him. Prayers for the Roths continue to feel that the peace and presence that only God can give. That only God can give. I think that's an important thing. Our hearts are restless until they rest in God.
Exactly. Thank you for praying. We've had so many people pray for us and still pray for us that we feel extremely blessed.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Okay. Well, guys, we might go ahead and wrap this thing up. I apologize for losing sound there. A lot of these comments are just no sound.
Oh.
So, yeah. All right. Well, if there's anything else you'd like to say before we go ahead and wrap up this live stream, feel free. I mean, anything at all.
I think we're just thankful to be able to share Krista's story. It is hard, but I think for grieving parents, it is important that their children are remembered. So I think it is helpful for us. It's hard, but helpful. Mm-hmm. I like a lot of this whole story, and we're thankful for that. And I want to say how thankful we are for so many different people from around the world that have helped carry us through it. I think, like you were saying a little earlier, Paul, you know, God's love is manifest through people. And so we have seen God's love pour out on us, and that's happened through people who have displayed that to us. And we're just very grateful for that, too. And so, I don't know, other than that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's that invisible love that is God is made visible through the interactions between humans. It's so strange when you think about it. That's the only time love ever comes into being. I mean, it's not even the love, willing the good of the other even at a sacrifice to yourself, which is what I kind of think love is, and just this deep compassion and sympathy and love for someone, wanting the best for them, even if it does nothing for you. It's really remarkable. It's a thing that I think only humans have, too. You say what you want about, you know, monkeys and stuff. It's not love, though. They keep things alive for different reasons. They keep their kids alive for different reasons, but they'll also abandon them when they need to. And sheesh, some humans do that. But yeah, it's really fascinating. Love is made visible through human interaction.
And we are grateful for the love we've received as Krista's parents from her, with her, and from God through people before, during, and after our tragedy. And again, we've been overwhelmed by love. I can't emphasize that enough. And we are just so grateful. And I wish I could name every person, but your show would become awful long and awful boring if we did.
Got it. Okay. Well, Tom, Jennifer, your story is incredible. I can't believe. I mean, you're just amazing people. To God be the glory. I got to keep saying that. You know what? Yeah. I know you don't want to take the credit for that. So, but you know what? You at least have some good brains. You can say that much, that you can reason and think the way you do. And God bless, or thank God for that as well, I guess. And thank you so much for sharing your story so courageously, so vulnerably. I know that people are going to be better off and very much inspired and enriched by your willingness to share this. So again, Tom and Jennifer, thank you for coming on to the Paul Garcia Show.
You're welcome.
Thank you for the opportunity.
Of course, my pleasure. And to everyone watching and listening, go ahead and share this episode. Leave a like, leave a comment, and thank you so much. Next time, call in, and I'll also try to get some better equipment here so we don't have any problems and the sound doesn't go out. But thank you so much for tuning in. Until next time, God bless and have a great week. Thank you, Marshallonis, for sponsoring these live streams. And that's a wrap.